Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 298. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. And thank you to our lead sponsor for 2017, Certified American Grown Flowers. The Certified American Grown program and label provide a guarantee for designers and consumers on the source of their flowers. Take pride in your flowers and buy with confidence. Ask for Certified American Grown Flowers. To learn more, visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org. The countdown for American Flowers Week and the Slow Flowers Summit has begun. We're only 5 weeks away from the June 28th kickoff of American Flowers Week 2017, and we're just shy of 6 weeks away from the Slow Flowers Summit, which takes place on Sunday, July 2nd in Seattle. You're invited to participate in both, and you can find all the details and links in the show notes for today's episode 298. At DeborahPrinzing.com. I'm going to preview as many of our Slow Flowers Summit speakers as possible, and today I'm so excited to share two interviews with you. First of all, please meet James Baggett, science and horticulture writer, garden editor at Better Homes and Gardens, and a true pioneer in garden media. I've written and produced stories for this incredibly generous and talented man for years, and I count him as a friend. In fact, as I mention often, if given a choice, I'd rather be his friend for life than ever have a chance to write a single story for him in the future. James is definitely demonstrating his friendship and support for my passion by agreeing to be our master of ceremonies during the Slow Flowers Summit. He's flying to Seattle from his hometown in Des Moines, Iowa, where Better Homes and Gardens and its parent company, Meredith Corp., are based. As luck would have it, my travels took me to Des Moines last month when Meredith sponsored my lecture at the Wonder of Words Festival on Earth Day. While there, I grabbed a short interview with James to share with you. James A. Baggett has been a garden editor and writer for more than 20 years. In addition to his new role as Better Homes and Gardens garden editor, he shaped content at Country Gardens magazine as its editor-in-chief for 9 years, after serving previously as editor of Perennials and as the founding editor of Nature's Garden magazines, both Better Homes and Gardens special interest publications. James also is the former executive editor of Country Living Gardener and Rebecca's Garden magazines. He's the author of Flower Arranging, a Best of Martha Stewart Living book, and the former garden editor of American Homestyle and Gardening. James formerly gardened in New York City, where he tended a 10 by 20 foot garden behind an 1850 brownstone. And he now gardens in Des Moines, Iowa, where all the available land surrounding his arts and crafts bungalow has been given over to flower beds, specimen trees and shrubs, and containers filled with, yes, more plants. James has a Bachelor's of Journalism degree from the University of Missouri Columbia's famed School of Journalism. In 2015, the American Horticultural Society honored James with the B.Y. Morrison Communication Award, which recognizes effective and inspirational communication through print, radio, television, and online media, advancing public interest and participation in horticulture. Visit DeborahPrinzing.com to meet James, find links to his writing, and to download a recent profile of him that our mutual friend Marianne Newcomer contributed to the GWA Association of Garden Communicators newsletter. By the way, she titled that profile Charming, Disarming, and Engaging, which is an apt description for James.
OK,
Okay, welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, and I am delighted today to introduce my good friend, James Augustus Baggett. Hi, James.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
We're sitting in your wonderful office here at Better Homes and Gardens, and you are the garden editor at Better Homes and Gardens.
That I am.
Brand new, but you have a long history here at Meredith and have previously been editor at Country Gardens, the award-winning magazine. And how long were you...
I took over the magazine in 2009.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Seems longer than that.
Well, that's what, 8 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty magnificent magazine. And I'm so delighted that you agreed to be our master of ceremonies for the Slow Flower Summit. So we'll get you out to Seattle and people will get to meet you. But you have a long and illustrious career, even though you are younger than me, as a garden writer and editor. Well, before we start, what's your relationship with flowers? Has flowers always been your thing?
Cut flowers, actually, have always played a part in my life. But I guess it really came to the fore for me in the late 90s. I was hired by Martha Stewart to write her Cut Flower book, and it really entrenched me into the subject matter. So I spent a good 2 years researching and working on her Cut Flower book.
And we're looking at it here on your desk, and The Best of Martha Stewart Living, Arranging Flowers, How to Create Beautiful Bouquets in Every Season. Were you given any, scope of work, or just told to create this book?
No, I actually was hired just to write the book. So I was along for the ride. But it was the concept behind the book was cut flower arrangements in each season that would be culled from a walk through the garden. That was the basic concept.
So today's craze about harvesting from the garden for your vase. You did this like 15 years ago.
Yes, but I'll tell you, if you can find the book and you get to the winter section, you'll see that they had to resort to a little bit more exotic choices than what might be found in your own backyard.
Okay. So, James, you're a Missouri native, right?
No, actually, I'm a Hoosier. I was born and bred in Indianapolis, Indiana. I went to journalism school at the University of Missouri, and right after school, I had done an internship at Popular Science, but I moved to New York and became an editor of a children's science classroom science magazine at Scholastic. So my background is as a science writer, and I consider garden writing to be science writing.
Absolutely.
I actually think that garden writing is science writing with jazz hands, because you gotta sort of sell it a little bit. And if you're writing about a flower or a blossom, best not to hold back. You need to gush. You need to express yourself. So it's a...
Well, you are authentic in your relationship with flowers in the garden. It's not just a subject that you treat as a job. I mean, you are a passionate gardener. And did you grow up with flowers or gardens?
I know I grew up picking flowers. Mm-hmm. Actually, I can remember being, even before I was... went to kindergarten, that we would there was a footbridge across a stream across the street from where we lived when I was quite young, and I would go off on an adventure on my own, and my mom would pack me a little lunch, and I'd sit on the bridge and eat my peanut butter and jelly sandwich. But on the other side of that bridge were dogtooth violet, Dutchman's britches, mayapples, and I would pick a little woodland bouquet and proudly bring it back home to my mom. But I honestly can remember doing that.
Oh my gosh!
I also, when my grandmother passed away in the late '80s. When I went to her funeral, they had those awful white gladiolas up on the altar for her funeral, and my grandmother was a great gardener. And so I actually went back to her house and pulled out her galvanized watering cans and walked around her yard and filled them up with her own flowers and brought them back and took the other flowers away and put them on the altar for her funeral.
Oh my gosh. Are these galvanized watering cans behind you from her garden, or are these just your collection?
These are ones that I have collected.
Wow. Wow. You have a bit of a thing for garden antiques, too, don't you?
Yes, I do. Mm. And last year, on my visit to the Chelsea Flower Show, I was very excited to buy two full-sized, restored 18th-century spade and fork. Full-size, not hand spade, full-size.
Oh, my gosh.
Carried them on as carry-on back to the United States.
Are you using them, or are they hung up on the wall in your living room?
No, they're going to be for display. In fact, all the Brits at the flower show were asking me if I was going to display them or use them, because they think they need to be used.
Oh, well, we won't hold you up for that. Well, what's going on in the world of garden journalism. What do you see happening in after, you know, being in print magazines for a long, long time? Your milieu is print. You're not like an internet guy. In fact, I have to out you here. I don't believe you even own a cell phone.
I do not own a cell phone.
Okay. This is what I love about you. Love and hate. Because it's hard to get a hold of you. But, I mean, you communicate through language and through beautiful photography and the experience, not virtual.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, for the last 8 years, probably the last 15, 20 years, I've worked exclusively on garden magazines, which is quite a luxury.
List the ones you've worked on.
I think my first, I was the garden editor of American Homestyle and Gardening, which was published by Gruner & Jahr. And then I was the executive editor of Country Living Gardener and Rebecca's Garden. And then I've been the editor of Perennials Magazine, Nature's Garden Magazine, and then I took over Country Gardens. So I've worked on all these garden magazines where the entire content was dedicated to gardening.
What a luxury.
And it's quite an indulgence to be able to dedicate 124 pages to a subject. And I've been able to explore every single aspect of gardening that I'm passionate about. I'm especially proud of the work I've done where we highlight all of the wonderful stories of gardening doing good in the world. So we've done stories with a sustainable garden in a women's prison. We've done stories with refugees in Omaha and in Kansas cities, and adults with developmental disabilities in Pennsylvania, an autism garden in downtown Chicago. It's been one of my favorite parts of doing the magazine.
And you pretty much created that ongoing feature in Country Gardens.
Yes, and it's still going to continue.
Okay. What's it called?
Breaking Ground.
That's right. I've written a couple for that. Yeah. And I feel like you celebrate gardening as a tool for change and social justice.
Well, I'm of the steadfast belief that gardening really does make the world a better place. So when you start at that point, the rest comes pretty easy.
I really respect you also, James, for your inclusiveness, and you seem to be very intentional about showing people of all walks of life in the pages of Country Gardens, I don't think a lot of your peers are doing that.
No, it is an active choice that we make in the stories that I seek to select, but it's been a part of my career from my whole life. I've always had an eye for diversity in the stories I tell.
Yeah. Yeah. So now at Better Homes and Gardens, and obviously it's a magazine that isn't just exclusively gardening.
No, it's not.
How are you going to show what you're passionate about in fewer pages? And that's
it
a
is
challenge.
It is in fewer pages, but I'm going to be looking for those compelling stories that get all of us excited to get out there and garden. And this is a much wider audience. Country Gardens is read by probably about 750,000 readers, where Better Homes and Gardens has a circulation of 8 million and a readership of about 40 million.
Oh my gosh. I can't even wrap my head around those numbers.
It's one of the largest print brands in North America.
Wow.
So, yes, it's reaching a much, much broader audience.
But you don't want to be just a generalist. You want to bring new concepts.
No, we will have
people,
something.
Right?
We will have stories for those who are avid gardeners and folks with green thumbs, as well as those for novice gardeners and folks who just want to get started or figure out how to even just begin with one project that they succeed at. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have an initiative here at Better Homes and Gardens called I Did It, and we're encouraging folks to post on social media for the first time they maybe make a souffle or the first time that they...
Forced a branch,
yes,
or something.
Yes,
yeah.
And so that's one of the efforts we have going on here.
The one thing I love about you so much, having worked for you many years, is that you all often say yes, almost always say yes, when I pitch you on a story about a flower farm in the pages of Country Gardens. The flower farm stories have just, I don't know, somehow they encapsulate growing and design and
lifestyle,
agriculture, and like all of the above. Why are they so popular? Is there a fantasy about flower farming that the Country Gardens reader?
Well, I'm going to say I think a good part of it is your good work in getting people to pay attention to local flowers, and so I think people now pay attention to where their flowers come from much more than they ever did in the past. So
I know you pay attention,
and I think the romance of that also is a part of this. But also, younger generations want to know where their food, where their flowers, where their the products they use come from, and that they actually go toward making the world a better place.
Yeah.
So I think all of those come together. But it's also about a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah. Back to the land kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also just what you mentioned about I did it. I mean, I think that kind of reflects the millennial maker mindset. I don't know. I'm not a millennial, but
last year we tried to dip our toe into, besides being the editor of Country Gardens, I also was the editor of about 12 other special interest garden publications.
In your spare time.
And one of them, we did an experiment last year to reach out to millennials. And we had started focus groups a couple years ago and found they really did like the model of packaging a magazine around a concept, not unlike BuzzFeed or any of those type of websites, where you would take a quiz at the beginning of the magazine to find your garden personality.
Oh, neat.
And then that information would be packaged throughout the magazine for that personality type. So we'd cover all subjects from growing edibles or cut flowers or composting. But in each subject area, we would have tips for that personality type pulled out. So if you were, whether you were a frugal gardener or you were an organic gardener or a small space gardener or a brand new gardener, all of that was carried throughout with these personalities. And then we also added another layer of a handful of popular garden bloggers that also had their own tips germane to each subject. So they wanted that sense of a community. So the magazine did fairly well, but we're busy trying to figure out how to actually get those products in their hands because millennials aren't shopping at the regular newsstand. Huh. And that's probably the biggest challenge across all platforms and media and publishing today.
What was the name of that magazine?
It was called Green Side Up. And if you see it on newsstands this year, we put it out again and given it a much simpler name, and it's called Garden Basics.
Oh, interesting.
It's right behind you in that box.
I saw it on the newsstand at Whole Foods, at the checkout counter.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so going forward, the people listening to this are readers, I hope, of Better Homes and Gardens, readers, I hope, of Country Gardens, but everybody who's in the flower farming, farmer florist, floral design world wants to get their work published. What advice do you have for people for how to get on the radar of a magazine like Better Homes and Gardens that's really trying to
be
all things to all people?
I got to be honest, Deb, there's no one way. But when I'm looking for stories, I'm constantly looking, and I never say no to anyone. If someone has an idea, I want to see it. So I'm open. I think you can reach out on your own. I've had many folks with private gardeners, professional gardeners, horticulturalists, floral designers reach out to me on their own, usually through email or through social media, and sorry, I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry, I got you. I was looking at your watch. Okay, so they've reached out to you with their ideas?
Oh, and we've ended up doing stories with them. So, hook by crook, I know. Most magazines, if you look in the masthead, will have a series of field editors. I probably would start there and reach out to those field editors.
Find the regional person.
Yeah, I would. I know a lot of the editors here at Meredith pay attention to people when they reach out to them through social media, and especially some of the more passionate readers. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't discount that as well as a way to reach out.
Hmm. What are you excited about right now? You're starting to plan for summer and fall of 2017?
No, we're jumping in full steam with spring. We have a lot of fun photo shoots coming up. We're shooting a moss story in Portland, Oregon, a sweet pea story in Massachusetts that will have cut flowers as part of it, a delphinium story that we're photographing in Connecticut. We're shooting lettuces with Renee Shepherd in California. And a beautiful tulip and cut flower story that we are doing in Rhode Island.
Ooh.
At a cut flower farm called Wicked Tulips.
Yeah, they're members of Slow Flowers.
Yeah.
Very cool. And I'm so glad you're coming out to the summit. I think people are really going to enjoy just meeting you.
I can't wait to be with all other people that are passionate about local flowers and spreading the good word.
Anything I didn't ask you that you want to convey?
I am sure, but I have to go to a meeting.
James, thank you so much.
You too, Deb.
I love you. I'm so glad
I had a chance to introduce you to James. His curiosity and passion about everything in the natural world comes through in all aspects of his work and his life. And I'm thrilled that he'll be joining us as the MC for the Slow Flowers Summit. Next up, past guest of this podcast, Emily Ellen Anderson of Seattle-based Lola Creative. If you missed my interview with Emily, which was episode 168, you'll want to go back and hear her entire journey of arriving at a floral career drawing from a background in landscape architecture. It's inspiring, and it's one of the reasons I asked Emily to speak at the Slow Flowers Summit on the topic of reinvention professionally, artistically, and sustainably. She will share her story and talk about how creatives are morphing with the changing cultural scene, changing aesthetic tastes, and changing values. And a huge bonus of having Emily involved in the summit will be her live demonstration of building a foam-free floral wall. It was during our recent walkthrough of the Surf Incubator event space where our summit will be held that I asked Emily to record this short audio clip to share with you. Our mutual friend Liz Browning of Laughing Girl Flowers was with us, and we were all so excited to see the environment that will house the summit gathering. We also discussed logistics of building a mini version of the massive floral wall that Emily and her team created for the 2016 Seattle Art Fair. Her business, Lola Creative, is comprised of a team of art-minded, world-wandering, endlessly curious event and visual art professionals who are ready to get obsessed with their clients' projects. They specialize in design and production of bold events with a focus on brand enhancement and generating a meaningful connection between guests and a host organization. Styled photo shoots and creative direction for online content and marketing campaigns, exceptional weddings for exceptional couples. Lola Creative includes craftspeople, architects, project managers, marketers, writers, painters, organizational masterminds, and bold thinkers. Lola operates out of a light-filled studio in Edmonds, Washington, serving the entire state and the Northwest region. Lola Creative promotes sustainable flower growing, low-waste events, and low-impact practices of all kinds, including composting plant waste, reusing materials, and sourcing locally and responsibly. Lola Creative has ceased the use of floral foam for its toxicity and non-biodegradability. A portion of profits from this firm benefit scientific research, creatures, and kids' education in entrepreneurship, art, and technology. Visit DeborahPrinzing.com for episode 298 to see photos of Emily and her work, including a video of the massive rose wall she and her team built for the Seattle Art Fair, and also to discover Curious Lola, Emily's blog where she shares tips, stories, and videos about building, running, and designing an event design and floral business. I'm so excited to have with me today Emily Ellen Anderson. Hi, Emily.
Hello.
You're a returning guest of the podcast. It's so good to be with you. We're here in the Surf Incubator space where the Slow Flower Summit will be taking place on July 2nd.
Yep. Exciting. It's a very cool space. You can see out to the city and the water. I love it.
Yeah, it's going to be really kind of hip and techy and not like a typical lecture hall.
Right.
So, I sprung this on you. Thanks for saying I could turn on the recorder. I want to just reintroduce you to the community and talk just a little bit about what you're going to be doing at the summit. You sort of have two roles. One is going to be sort of ongoing during the day of installing and demonstrating your unique technique and approach to a foam-free flower wall. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Because I know that foam-free is one of your values at Lola Creative, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we kind of proclaimed that we were going to be foam-free about 3 or 4 years ago.
I remember that.
Yeah. And ever since then, it's an ongoing exploration into what materials we can use to get looks that are, kind of your classic floral structures.
So like that, dense and compact and solid kind
exactly, of. Exactly, okay. Solid. And the reason for that is we don't, not all of our clients are, the sustainability is not at their front of their ethos, their desires. Yeah. Exactly. So it's kind of our thing, and whether or not they are into that, we do it anyways. Mm. So so kind of having some flexible options where we don't have to very often say, no, we can't do that look because we don't do foam, is something that we're always kind of exploring. And the use of moss is really what we use to make this flower wall. And there's we have a few ways to make flower walls. Some involve kind of a sandwich of different cardboard products and just kind of poking holes and sticking flowers through that. And this one is very cool because it's made to last in the sun. So it's made to be outside for a long time.
Wow.
So it's really, it's kind of just a big moss sandwich.
Well, you did a really amazing rose wall for the Seattle Arts Show. What is that called?
It was a Seattle Art Fair. It's like they turn CenturyLink Theater, which is our big football stadium, I'm sorry, soccer stadium, and they turned it into an art gallery.
Wow.
And so we had
it's kind of a world-class art
exactly,
show.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, people come up from all over the world. And for their opening night, they had all the art community come and have a party, and we did a 25-foot-long wall that was kind of their photo backdrop, mm-hmm. and it had a big, thick strip of roses and plants weaving through that. So
wow.
That was what they came to when they arrived.
I saw the video that was produced showing how you clips of how you made that. Can I share that on our show notes?
Absolutely.
Okay, that'll give people a flavor of what we're going to do in kind of a micro way at the Slow Flower Summit. Yeah. What I'm excited about is that we're going to try to have this be a little interactive where people can have a chance to work with you, maybe add a few stems and just see the technique.
Totally.
And you'll be able to answer questions in real time.
Yes.
That's exciting. And so the response from clients has been, we don't care how you make it as long as it's beautiful, or I mean, or do some really value that you're not using foam?
Oh, yeah. Some really value. Some of most people is just a bonus. So we mainly work with corporate clients. A lot of, sometimes we have weddings, and a lot more of our weddings highly value that. Mm. But our corporate clients, it's more of a bonus when you mention that sort of thing.
Well, I remember a couple years ago when I had you on the podcast originally, you had just, you shared some kind of wall installations that used a different product, like a foam board or something, and you were drilling a pattern of a logo and then tubing every flower?
Yes.
And is that the other technique that you still
do? That's our other technique, and that is with a bio board product. It's like a cardboard, but it is biodegradable in that if you pour water on it, then it will turn to mush. So it's very
really
biodegradable.
Which is thus why you can't have any moisture
right.
in contact with it.
Right.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. We've gotten that a corner wet before, and that's surprising. We found ways to also make that work and not turn to mush.
Good. Well, I think this will really get people who feel like they're stuck with no options to realize there are other techniques. Is it end up being more expensive to use your moss sandwich technique?
I don't know. I think it might be. I don't know, honestly.
Yeah. Do you have a rough per square foot price that you generally shoot in?
Maybe I'll think I can go back and get you that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's probably it's over $100 a square foot for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that exact price, not sure.
Well, that's why we're going to do a small one.
Yeah.
Slow Flower Summit. And I'm receiving offers of donations from local flower growers
exciting.
Who are, I know for sure Peter Court Roses is going to donate a lot of product for that.
Cool.
And you've designed with their roses before at the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market.
Yep, that'll be exciting. He's got so many different varieties. And the last wall we did with them was, it stayed up for 4 days. And that was one of the cardboard
tubed things.
Yeah, tubed structures. And that stayed up for 4 days and still looked pretty good.
Wow. Well, the other topic that you're going to actually speak on is, and it's I know you're still evolving it in your head, so I'm putting you on the spot here, but I love that we came up with this title, Reinvention Professionally, Artistically, and Sustainably. Because when I first met you, I was so fascinated to know that you have had a career as a landscape architect before you got into floral, and I feel like you must have had to reinvent yourself, and I think that that's a topic that everybody can draw from, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think in my own journey, I feel personally like landscape architecture was never actually the great fit. So I feel like my journey has just been kind of looking inward and pulling apart what is actually important to me and what isn't, and then using a business as a vehicle to kind of get those things fulfilled. So
it's kind of opposite how you're supposed to do a business, but I love it.
Well, that's one of the big surprises that I've come to. Whereas when I started the company, I thought of the company as its thing that should be nurtured and built into its own moving thing. And mm-hmm. right now I'm thinking maybe it's the opposite.
Oh, like you were supposed to sustain this business and take care of it like a child.
Yes.
And now you're saying, no, how can this nurture me?
Right, right.
It's kind of an interesting flip.
Yeah.
I love that you're going to explore that with the audience.
And I feel like my business at least is, I feel, always reinventing itself a little bit, and that it might end up going the other way. But
well, you don't lock yourself in.
Exactly.
Well, I kind of wanted to bring up the landscape architecture thing because I think that even if you didn't decide to be a lifelong landscape architect, the way your training gave you the confidence to engineer these outrageous installations, even this wall, it just was a tool in your toolbox that now you're employing with Lola Creative.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it doesn't mean you have to have that training. You just have to be able to think in a new way.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when I hire people, I kind of look for that. And it's kind of a interest in how things work. So if you can find somebody with kind of that mechanical brain, even though they've maybe never even done, they've never made anything.
Or worked with flowers.
Right, or worked with flowers or built with tools or anything like that. I'm always looking for those kind of people who are trying to figure out how things work, how to pile things up and have it stand up on its own and, you know, carry as many things as possible without dropping. Just those types of people tend to be able to build things well. And but I think it's a part of the brain that just can be nurtured and built and mm-hmm. like anything else. Mm-hmm. And being a landscape architect, I feel that I have been developing that for a long time. Mm. And as a sculptor, I have a sculpture degree too. So also working with a different type of materials in that regard, constantly building my toolbox of how things work and how things go together and how things can stand up on their own.
I love it. Well, I'm so thrilled that you're going to be part of this. I feel like this is a hot topic in our industry, is how to create these walls that are not going to go just right into the landfill, which I know happens every single weekend in our universe. And in some small way, you're a change agent for inspiring people to rethink that practice. And don't just say, well, that's my only option.
Right.
And it does take a little bit more work, and I appreciate you doing that work.
And I think it's hard as an artist, as I think any artist, somebody says, here are tens of thousands of dollars, make me something beautiful, and, you know, you get a twinkle in your eye, and you're like, I don't care what it takes, I'm going to build that thing. But it takes a little bit more time and energy and thought to figure out how you could also take that money and be responsible with it.
Mm, appreciate that. Well, I'm so glad that I grabbed you and that you came up here. We're going to go have coffee now with our other friend, Liz, who hasn't said a word, but hi, Liz.
Hi.
Liz is Another escapee from landscape architecture.
We actually went, we're in school at the same time, yeah. So it's funny.
Okay, to be continued. Maybe we'll get you next, Liz. Emily, thanks so much. I'm really glad I could share that video clip on the show notes for today's episode so people can kind of get a sense of the undertaking. And it looked like you were having a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was fun.
The music helps, right?
It's always scary with a timeline, but, you know,
great,
helps.
Great. Okay, good. Well, we'll see you all on July 2nd here at Surf Incubator, which is this amazing techie kind of environment for startup businesses that we're using their meeting space. And it is pretty nice to know we can rest our eyes on Puget Sound when we get a little bit restless. It's a beautiful, it's natural light means a lot to me and I think to everyone in our industry. So maybe we'll share a few photos of what this space looks like.
That's a good idea.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us today. The Slow Flowers podcast has been downloaded more than 191,000 times by listeners like you. Thank you to each one of you for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. It's time to sign up for the summit, and you can find the registration link and more details at deborahprinzing.com. The information you will gain in a single day at the summit is an incredible value for just $175, and members of Slow Flowers receive a great thank you rate of $135. Your registration includes all lectures, coffee and light breakfast, lunch, and a cocktail reception with our speakers, plus a flower lover's swag bag and chance to network with the doers and thinkers in our botanical universe. I can't wait for you to join us in Seattle on July 2nd in the heart of American Flowers Week. If you value the content you receive each week from the Slow Flowers podcast, I invite you to show your thanks and support us with a donation. The button can be found on our homepage in the right column at deborahprinzing.com. Your contributions will help make it possible to transcribe future episodes of the podcast. Thank you to our family of sponsors, Arctic Alaska Peonies, a cooperative of 50 family farms in the heart of Alaska, providing high-quality, American-grown peony flowers during the months of July and August. Visit them today at arcticalaskapeonies.com. Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, a farmer-owned cooperative committed to providing the very best the Pacific Northwest has to offer in cut flowers, foliage, and plants. The Growers Market's mission is to foster a vibrant marketplace that sustains local flower farms and provides top quality products and services to the local floral industry. Find them at seattlewholesalegrowersmarket.com. Longfield Gardens provides home gardeners with high quality flower bulbs and perennials, and we're so happy they're a sponsor. Their online store offers plants for every region and every season, from tulips and daffodils to dahlias, caladiums, and amaryllis. Visit them at lfgardens.com. Syndicate Sales, an American manufacturer of vases and accessories for the professional florist. Look for the American flag icon to find Syndicate's USA-made products and join the Syndicate Stars loyalty program at syndicatesales.com. Johnny's Selected Seeds, an employee-owned company that provides our industry the best flower, herb, and vegetable seeds around, supplied to farms large and small, and even backyard cutting gardens like mine. Check them out at johnnyseeds.com. The Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers, formed in 1988, ASCFG was created to educate, unite, and support commercial cut flower growers. Its mission is to help growers produce high-quality floral material and to foster and promote the local availability of that product. Learn more at ascfg.org. I'm Deborah Prinzing, host and producer of the Slow Flowers Podcast. Next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers Podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Brindlin. Learn more about his work at kinetictreefitness.com.